Hey!
Hey! Here we are!
Hey, I was just talking to someone. Maybe think of this. I don't know if we should even open up with this. I might open up a can of worms. But thinking about parents.
Poor parents. We talk about them a lot.
You know what? They deserve it. They picked on us so much when we were kids. But maybe one of the best things you can do in a relationship for yourself is to ask yourself, what are the residual effects your parents had on you? And I think a lot of times what bugged us about our parents, we don't realize that we've now adapted and we use in our own way.
Yeah.
And just thinking, you know, so what is it my parents did that maybe bugged me that now I probably do some of? So I'll give you a practical example.
Okay, come on.
Tell me if this makes sense to you.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
You think so?
Oh my goodness. Yes, our dad did that.
I think he still does that.
He probably still does that.
Yeah. I thought it was just crazy because he would rub his face and talk at the same time and you couldn't understand him. And then he'd look at you like, answer me. You'd be like, I don't know what you just said.
That's funny. And the thing about doing that, and for Garth and I as brother and sister, things that he remembers about our parents that impacted him are different than what impacted me. And so then that's always interesting to compare notes. And we don't mean to be picking on our parents.
No.
We actually feel free to talk about them because they really were great parents.
They were. Still to this day, my dad's best advice for me growing up is, your greatest strengths will be your biggest weaknesses.
Yeah.
And how many times I look at my life and I go, oh, that's just so true.
Yeah.
So true. Anyway, so if you're listening, maybe your own little counseling session with yourself is to look at your parents, ask yourself what the things that they did that maybe idiosyncrasies or irked you or you just flat out didn't like, and are you carrying any of those residual effects, because you probably are. So
yes, right.
Anyway.
Okay.
So I'm going to read you something that I preached this last week in a sermon, and it's about mindsets. And
I knew it was a matter of time until he got one of his sermons in here.
Yes, so we'll be taking an offering. No, but the Dispenza, what's the guy's name? His last name's Dispenza. Great, I mean, he's got some great things. Let me Google this real quick, because I want to, Dr. Dispenza, Joe Dispenza. Yes, he's got some great stuff on mindsets. But I'll read you something, and it's kind of from him, but I've adapted it a little.
Okay.
And this was in connection with yesterday preaching about how in James 5, it says if you have anything to pray, or if you have a sickness, or if you have a celebration, or if you have a problem, go directly to God and pray about it. And then also in Matthew chapter 6, where God talks about, you know, worry, 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 and he says, don't worry, but seek first immediately God. So always go to God first when you have a problem or an issue or celebrate or whatever it is. And the point behind that is this quote, your thoughts create feelings, your feelings create emotions, your emotions create states, your states create moods, your moods create mindsets, and your mindset creates the personality in which you choose to live your life out of.
Wow, a lot there.
A lot. But again, Dispenza said, you need to bypass all of that and immediately choose the right response or choose what you want it to be. And when I heard that, again, I immediately thought of Scripture, how when I have an issue or problem, I want to seek out advice for two reasons. One, I want to seek out advice for what I want to hear.
Right.
Or two, I want to seek out advice for why that person's wrong. And so one is I want to hear why I'm right.
Sure.
And then one, I want to hear how someone emphasized, yes, they're wrong.
Uh-huh.
But instead, seek first what God says in his word and in prayer. With that being said, how do you see this in your practice? I'm sure you can't see the wind up. you just see once the person walks into your office. But how do you see people's mindsets, and over time you've noticed how they've evolved to now this is why they think what they think, or this is why they're at where they think what they think. You know, this is how they've created this personality. You know, kind of going back to our opening statement, you know, we get so many things from our parents.
Right.
How do you help someone change that mindset or that personality? And what are the dangers, from your perspective, of who we ask advice from or for?
Whew, he's asking some deep
questions. I know this is a 30-minute podcast. And
okay, so I'll give you, again, without a lot of preparation, the thoughts that come to me. So a lot of it relates to what we know in therapy that's been very much effective intervention is cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. And in this case, we're talking about having the right thoughts, not distorted thinking, because thoughts impact and drive behavior. So thoughts impact feelings, and then feelings drive behavior. And as human beings, we tend to do it the opposite way, where we let our feelings dictate our behavior, and that gets us into all kinds of trouble. So I try to work with a client to say, if you want to behave differently and have a different outcome, it starts with how you think about it. So how are you thinking about it? Is it distorted? What's the real truth about this? Mm. And as you begin to think, and it's biblical, think on these things or renew your mind, as you begin to think truthful thoughts and thoughts without distortion, that impacts your feelings. Your feelings then will impact your behavior. So I teach them that formula of first it's thoughts, then it's feelings, and then it's behavior, rather than acting on your feelings and having feelings, behavior, and then to see what you think about it. Well, that's not going to have a good outcome.
Right. Are you familiar at all with NLP, neuro-linguistic programming?
I'm not.
It's kind of along the same line. There's an open loop and a closed loop in how we think.
Okay.
People perform their best when it's an open loop, meaning they're not consciously thinking of what they're doing.
Yes.
So an athlete, a professional bowler, they don't get up there and think, okay, I'm going to hold the ball like this, I'm going to come back like this, I'm going to spin like that, it's got to hit right here, it's got to go. They're far beyond that. They practiced all those things to begin with.
But now it's automatic?
It's automatic, okay. Yes. But they have something that helps them get into what's called an open loop. They might have a word or a tick or whatever. As someone who shoots a bow and shoots a gun a lot, I have practiced all the mechanics, but I get to a point where I take a deep breath, and as I exhale, I try to go to an open loop, and I just go, boom.
So as to, in a way, what you're saying, as to not, in the action part of it, that's not the time to overthink it.
Right. But with NLP, what we typically do in a negative sense is we create the personality and we reinforce the negative response because we rehearse the whole thing.
Sure.
And we rehearse how it should be.
Right.
But we end on how it affects us.
Yeah, that's powerful.
You know, so I go, okay, you're bothering me. Your breath is driving me crazy. You should brush your teeth, all these things. But I end on then, and I don't know how long I can be in here. I can't take it. Rather than
right.
focusing on the solution.
Yeah.
And this is really dumbed down. It's way more, you know, tedious and insightful than that. But I wonder how many people, because they come into your office and my office, and they've rehearsed so much that it's the other person's problem, it's created a personality that's the only way they can see it.
Right.
I can only see, and it might be. But how, I mean, what are the stages? It's got to be more than just think differently. Are there steps that you know of to help a person say, I've got to stop and, in a sense, reprogram how I see this problem or how I see that I take on problems?
Right. Well, yeah, I recommend, and there's all kind. I mean, you can find some good resources online by doing a deep dive, do the Google. But just there are all kinds of processes to actually slow you down and think about it differently. And but writing it out, so like there's a grid. You can put your thoughts and your actions through this grid. You can, there's different categories, and it can, it can force you to go, what am I thinking? What am I doing? And then it, there's exercises and resources that help you take the other person's position. What are they thinking? What are they doing? What are possible explanations? What are other explanations? What evidence do I have that supports what I believe is the truth? What evidence is there for, you know, so there's, that's just examples of, I try to make them kind of break apart their current thinking and doing, their current pattern, both thoughts and behaviors, and first dig into that and really figure out what it is. Because we it's automatic and we don't think about it. So we have to slow down and think about how we're thinking.
Right.
And who we're focusing on, and identify all the pieces and the parts, and then determine which parts of that process need to change so that we have the outcome that we want.
So a book I read last year, and I'm probably not going to be able to find it, but they talk about a study that Harvard University did.
You can just describe it. We'll believe you.
Well, the point was, it was very, very, very insightful in that this these sociologists, I believe, from Harvard, they wanted to figure out the best way to change someone's behavior.
Okay.
And that's not the Circle Maker. That's the dumb book. Sorry, Mark Patterson. But the point was, is they looked at all, you know, they're all the NLP and your central nervous system and your reticular activating, so all these high thing, you know, multiple steps, and they came back with the simplest, most effective way to change your behavior was to think of what you wanted,
okay,
and to think of what would stop you, what's in your way,
okay,
and then go back to think of what you wanted, and then think of what would stop you and what's in your way. Now, what we do is we think of what we wanted, what's going to stop and is in our way, and how hard it's going to be, and how we're going to be unhappy, and how we're never going to change, and how that's way too much, and how the steps are too long. We feel it, and they said, you go, okay, if I want to practice the piano, and I want to learn how to play piano, okay, what do I want? I want to learn how to play the piano, and I have a picture of whoever it is in my mind.
Okay.
And what's stopping me? Well, time, and I don't have a piano, and I can't pay for lessons. Okay, but what do I want? I want to play the piano, like Barry Manilow. And, and what's stopping me? I don't have time, I don't have a piano, and I don't have money for lessons. Okay, but I want to play piano, like Barry Manilow. I want to be able to sing a song to my girlfriend. What's stopping me? I don't have time, I don't have a piano, I don't have money for lessons. I don't focus on how that makes me feel.
Right.
And all that, I just keep replaying it. And they say what it does is over time, the enticement of playing the piano begins to eat away at the things that are stopping me. And I suddenly go, you know, I'm not doing anything Saturday late afternoon. I do have time Saturday late afternoon.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden I go, you know what? Joyce has a piano. I don't even think she plays it. I wonder if on Saturday afternoon she would mind if I came over and played on it. And I bet there's somebody on YouTube who just has a video on how to start piano. And so they said,
it's free.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But they said, as soon as you go beyond those two steps, how you see it makes you feel and why you can't and you'll never be good, they said it reverts you back and you kill the energy or the synergy of the first two.
Wow.
And it's so funny because I started to practice it in a few areas of my life. I don't need motivation for the most part.
Yeah.
But there are some things I'm like, you know what? I do need to do a little more in this area or this area. Incredibly powerful. But again, it goes back to this how to change your mindset. Because what I first read, there were so many steps we put into place.
Right.
You know,
right.
You're the problem and here's how you need to change and blah, 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 blah. And I create a whole scenario that I start to act out of. It's the Sesame Street, was it Bert or Ernie or Grover? I don't know. It's the vacuum sketch.
Yeah.
Where, I don't know if you remember, where he goes to the front door and he knocks on the door and he's talking to the camera. He says, I need to borrow his vacuum. I made a mess And he has a vacuum. I don't have a vacuum. And his self-talk says, you know, he will probably let me use his vacuum. And maybe he's using it right now. Maybe he can't use it. Maybe I can't use it. Maybe he doesn't want me to use it. Maybe he doesn't like me and he doesn't want me to. And so by the time whoever answers the door,
yes.
he yells at him, I never wanted to use your vacuum anyway. And he
right.
marches up.
Right.
Now, that's pretty heavy stuff for a kid watching it from Sesame Street.
Right.
But I think back on it and go, but that's how we create mindsets in which we operate out of in relationships. How many relationships they're at a level 9 conflict only because it started at a 2 and in their mind they built it at a level 9?
Right, right.
And so to create and build those healthy mindsets, a lot of times it's not changing as much as just stop thinking.
Yeah, there's been many times for Mitch and I where if there was something that was bothering me and it was in that category where I was way overthinking it, and then I just would catch myself and say, just stop.
Yeah.
Just stop. Just, you know, just ask him simply, would you please not do that, or would you do, you know, rather than how it makes me feel and if it keeps on, what's going to happen. And personality-wise, you are stronger in that area, Garth, than someone wired like me, because it's a hard habit for me to get out of, to not want to go and explore all those different, you know, attachments to that particular thing and that mindset and explore all the avenues and all the feelings about it. And I think you're right. I think there's a lot of times where it's just like, you know, let's jump over the feelings and let's just keep pursuing what is the ultimate goal that we want in this.
Two thoughts. One, if any of the listeners or viewers know of that skit I'm talking about in Sesame Street, and you remember it clearer than I do, or you even find a link, send it to me or let me know.
Okay.
You know, you brought up something interesting. When you say, Garth, you're so much better at that, it makes me think of something that, again, I think I've just learned over time or picked up somewhere where, you know, going back to what Dad said, your greatest strengths and your greatest weaknesses. It was an epiphany to me years ago, because I was like, I've never been tempted to do drugs. I just never have. Not
right.
get high, not drink, not smoke, not snort, nothing.
Right.
Through high school and college, I chewed a little. Just more out of everyone chewed when we were fishing, so I chewed when I was fishing. But an epiphany came to me when I was trying to figure out, why is there no enticement? And it's because, as you know, an Enneagram 8 has to be in charge.
Right.
Has to be in control.
Right.
And what I realized is, I know that I won't be in control yep. if I start to use a drug or get
yep.
drunk or, and control is too, I have to control. So I'm not going to drink or smoke.
Right.
Now, in a sense there, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
It keeps me from.
Sure.
It has many also bad negative consequences.
Yes.
But going back to a situation where if I'm in a relationship and I need motivation, what are my personality traits that I can use to help motivate me
yeah.
to step into that?
Yeah.
So if I'm in a situation with my wife where we totally disagree on something and we're going head to head, I go, okay, I have to be in control of this situation. So rather than, from my perspective, try to control it, I'm going to control the fact that she solves it. I'm
yeah.
going to do whatever I can to
there
help her
go.
Solve this
there
so that
go.
I better understand and we come to...
That's your way to control.
Yeah.
So it's going to be way better for her and you.
Yeah. And again, it can, you know, you can use it to manipulate the other person or you can use it as an excuse to your own behavior. But I know there are people out there
right.
who are not eights. They have their own enneagram or own personality style. How can you use that then to help solve the problem between you and that person, or as at least a motivation to do
yes.
that, or change that state or that mindset that you're in?
Yeah. And when it's our spouse, sometimes we're so close to it we forget. So often what I will do is I'll say to myself, okay, as a 2, and sorry if you're not into the Enneagram, but I'm a 2, or I'm I can't even remember all the different types, but anyway, so I'm the helper, I'm the counselor, I'm the, you know, I'm good at meeting people's needs. So I try to zoom out and say, okay, well, as a 2, what would I say or how would I deal with this if it was a friend and
right.
not my husband? Or if it was a client?
Right.
And that helps me to leverage my strengths and get some objectivity to it versus just getting so focused, you know, and lose insight because I'm too in it.
Right. The pastor that I worked for back in Chicago and Seattle, Dennis Sawyer,
mm-hmm.
he had a great line all the way back in Chicago, which was back in the 80s, and it just so stuck with me. He said, when in doubt, I ask myself, what would the best Dennis Sawyer do?
Oh, that's good.
And he goes, and I would picture, not me, but I'd picture the best Dennis Sawyer.
Right.
And I remember that so many times I come back to, okay, I'm in a situation, I really don't know what to do.
Right.
But I know what the best Garth Heckman would do.
Yes.
And I remove myself and said, what would the best Garth Heckman do?
That's good.
And there are times I remember coming home, I'm driving into the driveway, pulling into the garage, and I'm expecting all holy hell to break out because of something that went on. And I'll stop and go, what would the best Garth Heckman do?
Yes, even before you go in.
Yeah, and I'll literally look down on the house.
Yeah.
And I'll see the best Garth Heckman walk into the kitchen through the garage door. Kim's probably making dinner. The best Garth Heckman will go up and say, I'm sorry, we don't need to talk about it now, but I apologize, I love you, I don't want to build a wall. And then I'll say, what can I help you with? Do you need help with the kids or dinner? Or whatever. Again, and that's what the best Garth Heckman would do.
Right.
I don't want to do that.
Right.
I'm right. Why should I do that?
Right.
She needs to learn to say, forgive me, or she needs to learn to ask my forgiveness. All these things. But then they go, no. But that's not what the best Garth Heckman would do.
Yeah.
And when I change the mindset that way, that has helped dramatically.
Yeah.
I need to do that more. Anyway.
I need to do that too. That's good.
All right. So here are how to communicate with that in mind, your concerns, the issues you might have with your partner or your spouse. These are ways that you can better get them to understand where you're at. Go through these. The first one is check your relational temperature, meaning how are you doing as a spouse? So how would you, before you bring something up, is it your place to bring it up? Because maybe you're not, maybe you're adding to the problem, or maybe you yourself have things to work on.
Yeah, I think, okay, so you say, okay, why? What is it? Why is it bothering me? What buttons is it pushing in me? And how am I doing in my marriage right now? What's the quality, what level of quality relationship am I bringing? Do I need to focus on some of that before I ever try to bring attention to him on something that's to me is wrong?
Right. So, to me, this is how I see this. I see it a little differently. Check your relational temperature. When I think of temperature, I'm thinking of, our natural temperature, when we take it, has to be 98.6 or 97,
something,
like that. I don't know. But if it's over that, if it's 100 or whatever, then I know something's wrong.
Yeah.
So I go, okay, what's my base temperature? My base temperature, I'm happy, I'm outgoing, I'm affectionate, I'm talkative, all these different things. So before I go to someone, my spouse, if I'm not in that temperature range, then I probably shouldn't go to them. So yes, there's a problem, there's an issue, you bounced the checkbook, you dented the car, you invited your mother-in-law, your mother to stay with us for 2 weeks, whatever it is, I'm making these up.
Right.
My temperature immediately spikes, but that's not the time to go. My normal temperature is when I'm happy, in a good mood,
yes,
laughing, talking, affectionate. When I can get back to that normal temperature, then I can go up and say, hey, come here. I love you. Hey, can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Just, I just want to know, I'm kind of laughing when I say it. Why did you invite your mom to come stay with us for 2 weeks? Just kind of a smile. I'm in my temperature.
Yep. You're at your baseline, which is good, upbeat, calm, able to focus, communicate kindly.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
So
that's a good illustration.
Next one is choose the right time and the right place.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Just talked about this last weekend when I spoke to couples. Choose the right time. Choose the right time. Choose the right time. Oh my goodness, we feel compelled sometimes. And I'm a verbal person, so I had to learn this early in our marriage. I literally, within the first month of our marriage, talked so much, talked Mitch right into the bathroom, and he turned around and looked at me and he said, I do need some privacy. And I was just, caught unaware that, oh yeah, this is a little bit of, I mean, my timing is terrible. And just get a grip. Most things can wait for a better time. There's rarely things that you can't put off for an hour or a day. Choose a good time.
So, do you remember, see, this is why it's good you're here, because people think I'm lying. In our family trips, where we'd all be in the car, or even at the dinner table, and all of us, all five of us, would all of a sudden realize we're all talking and no one's listening.
Yes.
So we would even make it more, we'd make yes. more fun of it. I yes. would just start talking to nobody about the dog. You'd yes. start talking, Renee'd start talking, Mom and Dad. And then we just start busting out laughing because we realized at one point here,
yeah.
everyone quit listening to someone and just were talking.
Right.
You know, like, well, I don't know why I'm talking to...
We're all pretty verbal.
Yeah. So, yeah, I could see where if you got married immediately, Mitch would be like, oh my God, shut up.
He was. He was just like, okay, number one, I also, timing-wise, I would do this thing where something was bothering me and I would hold it in, and then I would go to bed and I would be crying and I'd be upset. So finally at 2 a.m, I'm waking him up. We got to talk. And he's like, now?
Yeah.
We got to talk now? I had to learn that. That is not effective.
Yeah. Timing, I'm the worst at as I'm leaving the house and I have got to get to work. I'm like, oh yeah, babe, I forgot. Tonight we've got to, or I'm going to do, you know, and she would see it as a power play. And I can see where that is. Like, hey, I don't have time to talk. I just want to let you know. I'm leaving tonight for Atlanta for 4 days. You're going to have to take care of the kids. What?
Right. Right.
Which is actually a true story. A whole other story.
Ouch.
But the way my brain works, you know, it's yeah. this bag of cats firing. I literally wouldn't think about it until, you know, I'm
right.
walking out the door going, oh, yeah, I'm leaving.
That doesn't go well.
No. So... For our podcast today, I reminded Kim like 3 or 4 times because I want to make sure I did because
yes.
I couldn't remember if I did. So
yes.
starting weeks ago, hey, remember,
yes.
to the point where she's like, yes, I know, you've told me. I'm like, okay, but remember, my modus operandi is to tell you as I'm walking out the door, and you're like,
right.
where are you going?
Right.
I'm going to lacrosse.
Yeah,
you know, like,
duh.
So yeah, timing is everything and the right place.
Yep.
We've all been in those situations where people bring something up in public or at the dinner table or out to eat with other people.
Yes. Not good.
Not good. Okay, next one. Share thoughts, feelings, and needs in an open manner.
That's pretty broad.
Yeah.
I would say, as important or more important, share thoughts, wants, and needs using I statements rather than you always or you never or when you do, blah, blah, you know, but... Hey, I want to be open with you. I'm really struggling, or I'm really feeling angry, or I am so upset, or I am so sad, because when this happened, and you name whatever it is they did, because when you didn't tell me you were going to go to lacrosse and do podcasts with Sheree, I was caught off guard, and that made me feel like disrespected. You know, so
yeah
openly... respectfully, and try to use as many I statements as possible.
I agree. The first thing that comes up to me is feelings. I can share my thoughts and feelings, but if they don't feel them, then it's a waste. So I want to tell a story or an experience they had to help them feel in touch with, you know, where I'm at, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I can start out that way, then all of a sudden we're kind of on the same level. So when I bring it up, you know, I think of the story in 2 Samuel where Nathanael, the prophet, goes to David and says, hey, there's this guy down the road and he had friends come visit
yes,
him.
Yes.
And he's wealthy and has all these sheep, but he went 2 doors down and this guy who's only got 1 sheep, he took his sheep and slaughtered it to feed this party, and David blows up. He's like, bring him here, his head. I want his head.
Right.
And Nathanael goes, I'm talking about you.
Yeah.
And how that story to help someone understand, hey, let me tell you a story, or do you remember when you told me this story, to help them all of a sudden, okay, I'm engaged in the feeling that you have, and now I know I can begin to share with you what's going on.
Yeah.
My wife is really good at that, and she's had to learn to be because I've... I want to solve a problem before I feel it.
Of course you do.
And so I think most men do. So I want to feel it before I try to solve it. And so she, you know, walks me through that.
And that's a real important key too, is I have had to learn with Mitch to tell him, I just need to express my feelings. I don't need you to solve it. Or this is how this is for me. How is it for you? Or is it what you're saying, Garth, is I get to tell Mitch, is what I'm feeling similar to when you felt this about when this situation happened, and I tell him a story about right. him. It's an art. It's a delicate art that you learn how to do with each other over the years that you're together.
Right. So, and I say this in my premarital counseling to men, especially, feel it before you try to fix it.
Yeah.
You know, feel it before
sure.
you try to, because we want to go straight to the fix.
Well, and I like the words connect, then correct. So
right.
I want to connect with how Mitch is feeling. I want him to connect and know how I'm feeling. And then if there's a fix or a correction that needs to happen, that has to come later. I mean,
right.
that has to come after the feelings
right.
piece.
My granddaughter yesterday or the day before, she fell running up the steps, our cement steps, hit her knee, scraped it, was crying. And so I picked her up and I said, does it hurt? Yes. And I started to ask her, how does it hurt? Does it hurt like when you fell off your bike? Does it hurt like when you fell off the chair?
Oh.
Does it hurt when you hit your head? Trying to get her to talk about the pain.
Yeah.
And it helped her settle down much faster than if
sure.
I said, it's okay, it's okay, it's
right.
okay.
Right.
Because pain's not okay.
Right.
And so if I'm trying to fix it right away without getting in touch, and then as she started to calm down, I said, oh, this is where Papa hurt himself once, and I felt that pain. And so something we can learn with
yeah.
our spouse. The last two, kind of what we were just talking about, tune in and listen to your spouse. This might be best noted as take this device, set
yeah.
it down.
Oh, yeah.
And I have people of all ages in my house that need to apply that. I being not one of them, because that would be, again, my first reaction. So I try to just put it away and try to focus. But I know there are people in our house from the age of 5 on up that need to work on that.
Right.
Last but not least, share what your spouse needs to hear and not what you want to tell them.
Oh, yeah. That's right up there with stop, you know, be a good listener. Stop sitting there rehearsing what you're going to say, what your response is, because then you're totally missing.
Oh, that reminds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and really trying to, you know, telling them what they need to hear is often good to first ask them, what would be helpful for me
right.
in this? And I can say, I need you to understand, or I need you to hold me, or I need you to speak up for me, you know, whatever. And then, because otherwise, for us, I don't want to be unfair to Mitch and just tell him, well, you need to tell me what I need to hear, and then make him guess what that is.
Right.
Because that's not fair. But so if I can tell him, again, in a respectful way, I need you to, and fill in the blank, 9 times out of 10, he's more than happy to do that, because number one, he's glad that he doesn't have to guess what it is I need from him at that point.
Right. You know, I won some brownie points yesterday because Kim was having a long day, tough day. Everything's been thrown upside down now with our grandkids living with us. And I just finally, in the middle of us talking back and forth, I just texted back, what do you need from me today? What do you need me to do?
Ooh,
said, I need
good.
You to come home early and do the grocery shopping. Okay, I'll come home and do the grocery shopping. My tendency would have been, well, I would have tried to fix the problem, then just owning it, saying, okay, I'll take your problem for you, I'll do it.
Right.
And I think it's so much more efficient as a man to
yeah.
just take the problem on
understand.
And solve it myself.
I understand.
But it's not if I just say, tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Boom, tell me what to do, I'll do it, problem solved.
Yeah, and I had to actually learn that it was better, like I would hesitate to tell Mitch what I wanted him to do or what I needed from him, because I felt like I was being nagging, or I was, you know, as a two, I shouldn't need anything, or I'm asking too much. And he was so great about, like, no, I want you to tell me, because otherwise it's a guessing game, and then it doesn't help us get into a better place.
Yeah, as the wisdom that I heard a long time ago, your spouse only knows what you tell them.
Yeah.
So tell them what you want them to know.
Yes, that's good.
So, and again, I don't have ESPN, so I can't read your mind. And there are so many times, and you've probably run, I know you have, probably 100 times more than I have. A couple will sit down and they'll start talking, and one of them will say, well, how would I know that? What do you mean, how would you know that?
Right.
You should just know.
Right.
Well, how should I just know?
Yeah.
If I had this power, I'd go buy the lottery ticket and, you know.
Right, that's right.
We'd move on.
It doesn't matter how many years you're together. I mean, you do develop a spidey sense, but still, even 40 years later, I cannot expect my husband to know what I need, what I'm thinking, what I want.
Right.
He doesn't unless I tell him.
Okay.
All right.
We just blew through that episode.
Okay.
I want to give two parting thoughts, and then I'll let you close it down. Number one, I would say to the listeners, when you're in a situation where there's a problem, understand that there's a lot you don't know.
Yeah.
You just don't know. So do not assume. Ask a lot of questions.
Yes.
And number two, again, try to feel where they're at, because that'll get you a whole lot farther than trying to fix the problem. Many times, if my wife just knows that I feel what she's going through, that's all she needs.
That's right, because then she or they will, they've got the smarts to figure it out. They just really needed someone to know how they feel.
Yep. Last thought?
Just again, marriage is hard, but it's worth it. It really is.
Yep. Awesome. All right. We'll see you next episode.
Yeah. Bye.